Hey, my name's Rob Noy, and you're listening to the Crossax Method podcast. This is where our team and I talk everything health, including training, nutrition, and many other topics. So kick back, grab a coffee, and enjoy the show. Okay, welcome back to the Crossax Method podcast, episode number 55. This week I'm here with Shannon Hensel, so one of the coaches you would have seen at Carina and at Crossaxed. Now, I purposefully ignored you, Shannon, when you come in, so I didn't have this awkward repeat conversation. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Yes.
Now, I noticed you had the kids in today, and they're hanging out down the front, watching some TV in the kids' room. School holidays, how's that going for you?
It's actually not too bad. This is the first school holidays we haven't been in lockdown for a while, so that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually going away this weekend, so that's
nice. Where are you going?
Gordon Country, camping.
Oh, I've heard it's very nice out there.
Beautiful.
Excellent. Cool. And so kids are all on track, they're behaving, not fighting too much?
No, they're good. They actually love coming here because it's the only time they get screen time.
Ah, yeah.
I just throw them the iPads and the phones and they're happy to sit.
Isn't it a tough bit of a conundrum, that thing?
Yes.
You know, like it's so good for us.
But so bad.
Because you can get work done. But it is bad for them. Yeah. My boys don't do so. I mean, they're really good. Like they're behaved and they'll jump on the screens. And if I let them have them, they'll just stay on them for 3 days straight.
Yeah.
But if I give them a bit of time on them, two of the boys don't deal with it as good as one. And one is worse than all of them.
Yeah.
So he just loses all ability to reason and anything and just wants to fight and argue. And so it's tough when you got stuff to do and you're juggling that. But what makes a lot of sense, even as I say it out loud to myself, obviously when you give them attention and you plan some things, it's all good.
Yeah.
They're all well behaved and that sort of stuff. So cool. All right. So, Shannon, we're just... let's get into a little bit of history about your coaching. I was really looking forward to chatting with you today because I know briefly some of it, but it'll be cool to dig in and have a chat to you about your previous experience with CrossFit and coaching and that sort of stuff. So where did you start?
Funnily enough, I started both training and coaching in Indonesia.
Cool.
So for those of you who don't know, my family and I spent the last 6 years, 5.5 years, living in Jakarta in Indonesia.
Yeah.
And so I was doing training before we went over there, but it was never CrossFit affiliate. So it was more functional style training.
Yep.
But just not the actual CrossFit style.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, went over there. It was actually funny. I listened recently to the podcast you did with Jade, and I have a pretty similar story. I kind of got thrown into a competition.
Oh, wow.
That I didn't anticipate being in. It was last minute, and some of the movements I'd never seen or done.
Yep.
And the coach, the guy that ended up hiring me as a CrossFit coach down the line, was there that day, and he said, "You've got to come in. You've got to do CrossFit." I ended up winning that competition.
Oh, how good is that?
Yeah,
competition. Went, "Oh, this CrossFit's pretty easy."
Well, to be fair, there was a lot of Southeast Asian contestants, and there was a swimming wad. So,
yes,
I was the only Australian.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so then I went in and started training proper CrossFit.
Yep.
And then from there, obviously, things like the snatch and all of those things I'd never touched before.
Yep.
And then just progressed over time, ended up spending more and more time in the gym. And then, eventually started doing some OPEX, and because I'm actually an early educator, teacher, early education.
Cool.
But, had a bit of a change of heart. Didn't really want to do it over there in the international schools and stuff
like
that.
Yep, yep.
Just started going down a different avenue.
Cool.
Did some OPEX specialized coaching training and then did my level one over there as well. Did it in Singapore.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool. There's a lot there.
Yes.
First of all, I really like, I get interested in hearing people doing, it's like, oh, I was doing functional fitness, but not CrossFit.
Yeah.
And sometimes it breaks my heart a little bit. Then when I look at it on a whole, I think it's a fabulous thing that that's what people are doing. I remember very clearly I was right into the health and fitness or whatever, maybe not fitness, but health and training sort of space before CrossFit came about. And there was no functional training.
No.
Like it didn't exist.
No.
Well, that's a lie. There was, I was following this guy called Ross Training, and he was a fighter, and he did a lot of, not, it wasn't CrossFit by any means, but he was a boxer. So there was a lot of boxing training, but then he would throw in like a lot of conditioning stuff, dragging sandbags and carrying stuff and slam balls and, you know, there was some of the original, like, cut a hole in a basketball, fill it up with sand, tape it up, use that sort of deal, right? Yeah. And then obviously CrossFit came along with this amazing methodology and package, and it just exploded from there.
Yeah.
And one side of the coin that really frustrates me is every other gym that you see that's functional fitness, I don't care what it is, it only exists because of CrossFit.
Yeah.
And that's great because more people are exercising and training, hopefully moving towards the methodology of functional training, which is great. I just like to I kind of have this bit of loyalty in me where I'm like, just acknowledge where
you started it.
You weren't coming. Oh, well, I didn't start it.
No, we like,
yeah, CrossFit, yeah, yeah. This is like, you wouldn't have thought of this without CrossFit.
Yeah.
You know, you like, and then so I get in this mental battle with myself. But anyway, let's get back to the real story.
I mean, to put it in perspective, the functional training I was doing was in what you would call a Globo gym.
Yeah.
So
the
good lifestyle gyms.
Yep.
But there was a group of 8 of us at the back there with a personal trainer who was just banging stuff together.
Yeah, and just getting hated by the probably by the owner.
What are these people doing?
Yeah.
And him and his brother actually went off to open up their own affiliate
out at
Ipswich. So yeah,
perfect. It's really good. Yeah, similar experience. I did a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
You get crazy looks.
Yeah.
I was working as a PT at a Good Life, and yeah. Doing, and this was before CrossFit as well. This is kind of when I was doing the Ross Training stuff, and CrossFit was kind of just starting in Australia. And I'd just do, like, you know, either high box jumps or something. Like, it was amazing the amount of people when I'd finish training, come up, what are you doing? Tell me what you're doing. I want to do some of that. You know, it was quite cool. But yeah, it's definitely not the norm. And I'd have a guess, like, I haven't been into one of those gyms for years and years and years. If you went in there, I think it'd probably still be, you'd get the same reaction. I don't know sort of training's still going on in those places,
absolutely.
If it's developed much or changed.
Absolutely. So I was actually coming back from Indo. Obviously, we just got in around the COVID sort of thing.
Yep.
And I just thought, I'm just going to take a break from coaching. And I went into managing exactly one of those gyms.
Yep.
None of that stuff's going on in there. None of that stuff. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's still very much the same.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about Jakarta and the culture there.
Yeah.
I mean, that must be... I've actually been to Jakarta.
Yep.
I went to Penang for the earthquake in 2009. So we responded over there. We lived in the field for a couple of weeks, and then we flew over in one of the C-17s. You might have seen it at Riverfly, you know, those big planes that were flying through.
Yeah.
So we flew over in one of them. It was horrendous. You're sitting in a cargo net with earmuffs on and earplugs the whole time. It's so loud. And anyway, long story short, finished the deployment there. And the government's like, oh, we'll put you guys up in Four Seasons at Jakarta because, you know, you've done a great job and all this sort of stuff. So we've, like, literally, I've had, like, 4 pair of overalls that I'd worn on rotation without cleaning them for 2 weeks in the field.
Great.
And then we'd rock up to the Four Seasons like this. I think there was medium team. There's like 50 of us, I think, and just grubby and... It was rant. So we've gone from just like living in the bush to like opulence.
Yeah.
But one thing I found really challenging, and it was kind of the same for me when I went to Bali as well, is you have absolute opulence literally backed onto absolute poverty. And I'm like, I don't, this is so in your face. It's really quite challenging, I thought. Because yeah. I remember we drove out on the bus after, like, I think we got into the Four Seasons at like really late, midnight or something. And we were leaving the following afternoon. And I literally dumped my clothes in a pile. And when I woke up in the morning, they were clean and my boots were polished. Like it was next level.
Yeah.
And then as we're driving out on the bus to go to the airport, there was this big, massive concrete wall. And on the other side of the wall was like people just washing themselves or cleaning their clothes in like black sludge.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, man.
What is this?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was actually one of the hardest things that I had to come to grips with. So flying into Jakarta, I'd never been anywhere in Southeast Asia. I'd done Europe, but never Asia.
Yep.
And Joel came home and said, hey, guess what? I've just been offered a job in Jakarta. I was at the time heavily pregnant. And I thought, you know what? I'm about to go on maternity leave. Let's Why go. Not? Let's just go for a couple of years.
Where?
Whatever.
Yeah.
So we went, flew in. Same thing, driving from the airport to home. I was looking around just going, this place looks like a war zone. This is, what is happening? Why have you brought us?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. We live in that little, we're going to be staying in that little shanty down there.
Yeah, but then, you know, you turn the corner and you're right. Like there's these multi-million dollar shopping centres with Lamborghinis lined up out the front.
It's crazy, it's,
The money over there is obscene. In comparison to people living in absolute destitution. It's, next level.
Yeah. Is there any, how is it seen over there? So to it's the hidden. Average, sorry?
It's just hidden. It's just, they
stay don't, there. They just ignore it?
Yeah. They just stay there. Every now and then, because it's not governed the way it is here, so they'll set up these makeshift shops and stores where they're making food just to earn an income.
Yeah.
And we're talking about selling things for 20 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
And then living off that money. And then police would just come along and just wipe out entire areas and be like, you've all got to move. You can't be here anymore.
Yeah,
so
right.
So then that'll just move and... So
go to a different spot.
Just go to a different spot, start again.
So what about though, like... So you're in a CrossFit gym. I assume the people there that are doing CrossFit...
Yes.
Would be middle to high income earners for their country?
Yeah, absolutely. So we didn't really see too much of the opulence.
Yeah, okay.
They would sort of stick to your, it was called celebrity something. I can't remember. But similar to good lifestyle gyms. Those are it was air conditioned. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Those,
you didn't get too too sweaty or anything.
We were essentially it was beautiful, the gym that I worked in, but it was a tennis court outdoors.
Yes, okay.
With a roof over the top.
So then the people that, say, would come, that would be in that sort of, I don't like saying class, but that sort of level of income and stuff.
Yep.
How did they view that that poverty? Did you ever talk to them about that?
Yeah, like all the time. So we spent a lot of time, and I actually learned this through spending time with them, is just you just got to give back. So they would spend a lot of time. Because there's this weird disparity that we look at as, I don't want to use the word slavery, but slave labor, essentially.
Yes.
You're paying a really low wage for someone to do something for you.
Yep.
But then the offshoot of that is they wouldn't eat otherwise. So even your middle income earners would employ people that are below the poverty line to come and wash their clothes, to polish their boots, to clean their houses, because that's their way of giving someone an employment that they wouldn't otherwise have, because they have such a large populace and there's just not enough jobs and the government doesn't offer any support. So they kind of rely on that.
So there's obviously nothing like Australia where we have, you know, job seeker or whatever the term, the dole is now.
No, absolutely not.
So there's none of that. Obviously, it's just like survival of the fittest. If you don't have a job, you don't get paid.
Yeah. And I used to do a bit of, I would do kids CrossFit, but I use that term very loosely. It was more like obstacle courses and just fitness classes and things. And I'm talking, when I say I was doing that, I was going out underneath bridges, which is where people lived.
Yeah, right.
So they just would build these communities in poverty.
Yeah.
And that's where they lived. And to go in there, it was absolutely heartbreaking.
Like, yeah.
No electricity, no toilets, a bucket to wash yourself in.
How old? So you were pregnant. Did you have any other kids that are a bit older?
Yeah, so we've got 3 kids.
Do they have a good appreciation now? Were they there? Did they see
100%. It? 100%. So they used to come with me, and we used to take, we'd collect toys and do drives and things, and then we would just go and hand them out, and you'd get mobbed, like the kids' pencils, just little basic things that we take for granted, and we would just take boxes of stuff that my kids just didn't want anymore, toys and and pencils and books and things like that, and they would you'd just get mobbed because they just had nothing.
That is, yeah.
But that's it breeds something. Like, I would never ever say that I wanted to do anything different because, you know, they're kids, and don't get me wrong, they have moments where I'm the worst person in the world because I won't buy them something.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'll never forget it. We came back and we were standing in a grocery line, and I was with my niece and my middle child, who is now 9. I think at the time he probably would have been about 6.
Yep.
And my niece is the same age, and she could not stop staring at, it must have been a Nigerian or something, it was very dark, standing behind us. And she was just staring and staring and staring. And Ethan to him, everybody looks different, everybody is different, everybody comes from different standings. So they don't really ask those questions anymore, and I don't think they would have that without that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I use this, like, the analogy of those poor kids with my kids all the time. It's probably wrong.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, they're not eating their dinner or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, well,
you know,
that's what you're getting.
Yeah.
Think yourself lucky.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a great leveler.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm to sure, go back to your actual question, that's what they would do. So it was something that they were all aware of.
Yeah.
The very upper echelon would just, it doesn't exist. And
don't care.
Well, you are beneath them. That's how they would view it. Those people are beneath them.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas your middle income and the people that we had a lot to do with, they definitely did not think like that.
Yeah, okay.
And we, if anyone has ever travelled, there's a big gym at Bali, a big CrossFit gym over there that people would have probably gone to.
Yep.
They all have cleaners on site, so trainers aren't vacuuming, trainers aren't doing those things. So there's employed people, and they're very respected by the CrossFit community and the people that are going there. And
that's cool.
So, yeah, there's a lot of that. We had 3 guys that lived on site that wouldn't ordinarily have anywhere to live.
Wow.
And they were just part of the crew. We used to take them rock climbing, and, yeah, they were really cool guys.
Yeah, wow. Awesome. That's a huge experience.
Yeah,
yeah.
Huge.
I found when, which was a big culture shock for us when we were at the actual disaster, their value on life seemed vastly different.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea, you know, when a building collapses, there's all these, it depends how it collapses, there's generally likelihood of big voids or small voids or places where people can survive. And so what we do if you know, all of the buildings in any sort of collapse zone get triaged, right? So they send essentially rapid team. You do all the surface search work, get all the people off the surface essentially that have broken bones or whatever state they're in.
Yeah.
We remove them. And then you rapidly try and triage all the buildings. Like, this building looks like it's got big voids. It's collapsed in this type of collapse pattern. It's a priority. It's got this many potential people in there that could be alive, this many people missing. We need to get a team there as a priority, and then so on and so forth to all the buildings. You know, this building has low chance of survivable voids, and there was only one cleaner on site. We'll get to that one when we can, unless we hear someone shouting, right? And so you triage all these buildings. This happens on a pretty high level. The operators do the triaging, but like the big bosses have maps, and you know, it's all divvied out to the different countries and teams that respond. And so you know, you go to these buildings, and then there's a massive search process. So for us to go into a building, generally speaking, we would shore it all up, and you know, you're basically building little tunnels as you go out of timber underground and this sort of stuff, and try and find people. We have these sensors that you locate and can triangulate someone, if they were just literally 6 meters under the ground scratching on a pipe, you'd be able to pick it up. So very thorough. If there's survivable voids and there's people in there alive, there's a really good chance we could get them out.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the first buildings we come to there was a girls' school. So you would think, like, our culture, that's the highest priority. And, you know, we were on the ground, I think, 24 to 30 hours after the earthquake. And we're, you know, going around to these buildings and triaging. And then we're like, yeah, we got to get here. And then by the time we anticipate getting back there, there's an excavator just ripping into the building.
Yeah.
And we're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know. And they're, because of their religion and their culture, they deemed it more necessary to get the bodies out and send them to get buried within that, I think it's 12 or 24 hours, excuse my ignorance, 24 hours, I think they need to be buried. Otherwise, they don't get into heaven or whatever their rule is.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, it doesn't really matter if there's some people that could be alive in there. We need to get the bodies out. And we're just like, my goodness.
Yeah.
And it really hit, like, it. Our team took a pretty big hit, you know, because it's 50
kids,
Aussie blokes, you know, our team. And, like, it, coming from just such a different culture, it's just like, what, you know, it's almost like a riot, like, you know. So it was pretty hard to take.
Yeah.
And their value on, or the, or how they valued life and the difference in their religion from, you know, here, or, you know, the, say the earthquake in Christchurch, vastly different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Joel actually works in engineering, and so he.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he heads into the mine sites.
Yep.
And in the end, that was part of the reason we had to leave, because he said, "I just can't do it anymore. I'm going against everything I've been taught up until," because, you know, you can imagine Australian mining standards.
Yep.
And so he has to adhere to those. And so then he was, because he was working for an Indonesian company, not a multinational.
Yep.
So they would be constantly like, "It's all right." And he's like, "No, it's not."
Yeah.
"No, it's not."
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of that. And it's across the board. People welding on the sides of buildings without shoes on and no scaffolding. And
yeah
there's a lot. A lot.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Brings home how fortunate we are.
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
Cool. All right. So you're coaching over there. Do most of the guys that you're coaching speak English?
Yeah. So okay. I speak enough.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So there would be some mostly on-ramp stuff. So when we used to call it fundamentals. So I used to take all the fundamental classes.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And so some of the fundamental stuff, it would be people that didn't speak very well.
Yes.
English?
Okay.
Very good English, sorry.
So could you say for me...
Oh, God. It's been a while now.
Just something simple, like squat below parallel or something in, like, Indonesian.
It's... No.
No?
Nah.
Or even just give us a hello, how are you?
Like, yeah. So selamat pagi is good morning.
Okay.
Yeah. Selamat pagi, apa kabar?
And then what would I say?
You'd say pagi.
Pagi. Cool. Huh, sweet.
Pagi, boo. Yeah. See, awesome. It's a strange... And this is the thing, this is what made it really difficult, is because there's not literal translations. So you wouldn't say to someone, "Can you squat below?" It would be "go down to."
Yes.
It's not quite a literal translation.
Yep.
It's actually quite archaic, the translation. So it's quite difficult. You're almost, if you could imagine how a caveman might speak, that is pretty, how it translates.
I'm probably pretty close to that.
So yeah, but it kind of flips everything. So it's like, me good, you.
Yes.
That's how basic it is. There's not like, "Hey, how are you?" And we have so many nuances. There were so many times I would speak and people would just look at me like, "I have no idea what you just said."
Yeah,
so that was difficult, especially coaching, because I would use way too many words.
Yes, okay.
So well, it's gotten me where I am now.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because
makes you very sharp with your cues.
Yeah. I use short, sharp to get people to do what I want. And I've had to adapt as well, because... You know, when you're trying to do, you know, tactile doesn't necessarily work. So, okay, what words do I have that are going to work?
Yeah.
And if they're not understanding your words, I had to get really creative. So I've got a lot. And... I've got a lot in my package now because of that. So it definitely made me a better coach.
Awesome. That's really cool. It's like forced, forced improvement.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Really quick.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And you said with COVID, You came back just before COVID, is that right?
Yeah, so we came back just at Christmas.
Yep.
And then, yeah, COVID sort of broke out January, February.
Yep. And how did you go through that?
Cluster would be a word I would use.
Okay.
I like to keep it in perspective. Obviously, I understand that there's a lot more than what I'm experiencing in Australia. And, you know, that's definitely helped me to keep it in perspective.
Yeah.
But I've lost a few jobs. I've lost a bit of money. I've eaten into savings. But, you know, I always like to believe that everything leads you to a path that you're supposed to be on. So that's how I like to think about it. And you just pivot, adjust.
It's a very positive way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pivot and adjust. And
what else can you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is, I know for everyone, and even, you know, on the weekend when we had a little bit of a throw in the hat around for some of the other affiliates that are still closed in Melbourne, just talking to some of those guys, they're just down.
Yeah,
down,
my
down.
Brother lives in Sydney,
yep.
or in New South Wales, sorry, Northern Beaches. So he's very much the same. It's just enough now. Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard, you know, like even this morning I was talking to the guys in the 9:15 class and I'm like, when are we going to be at a point where it's like, you've had your chance to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Let's open it up.
Yeah.
You know, and that sounds really harsh, but there is so much more to it as well, because then we had someone in the class that's like, well, I have got an autoimmune disease and suffer from a family history of blood clotting.
Yeah.
So they couldn't have the AstraZeneca, and their doctor advised them to wait for the, I think it's called Novavax or something, to avoid the Pfizer because of their autoimmunity. So it's like, oh, shit, I didn't realize.
There's a lot of that.
There's a person that can't get those vaccines as well. Yeah. So it's not a straight cut as we'd like to think, I guess. But
no, that's all right.
I know everyone's kind of wary or worn down, I should say, of the uncertainty.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the hardest things. And even just listen to the news then, we've got another 4 cases in Brisbane or something. Like,
I read that, I was like, no!
Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll test me. Homeschooling as well, thrown on top of the holidays, that'll be...
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be rough. Anyway,
hopefully
it doesn't come to that.
So, I think... this too shall pass is how I like to think about it.
Absolutely. And before you know it, it'll be just part of life and it won't be even a thing. And I'm hoping that's, you know, New Year's or something like that.
Yeah.
It's we're all fully open and business back to usual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. We're going a bit off script today because I didn't look up the script and
I don't
think you prepared for it either. So that's good. Tell us a little bit about your current training, like your training.
Yep.
And if you have any goals in mind or what's happening there?
So obviously when I was living in Indonesia, I had a lot more time. I had, like, we had a nanny. So I was able to go to work and train, and I was competitive. So I was competing in a few Southeast Asian competitions over there. We would just travel to different countries and compete.
Oh, cool.
It's a bit like we do here, but we actually jumped on a plane to do it.
Yeah.
So I've lived that. Now I'm just, you know what, I just want to train for fitness. I want to train for life.
Excellent.
So that's where I'm at the moment. I say shouldered a few injuries, but one of those is my shoulder.
Yep.
So I've got a few limiting factors, which is kind of why I took a step back from coaching to start with anyway.
Yep.
Trying to do bar muscle ups and ring muscle ups and things on my shoulder at the moment. I'm a bad ring muscle up away from a shoulder reconstruction. So
yeah, okay, well.
Really avoiding that. So I scale myself
and it's
constantly.
It's not limiting you anyway.
No, absolutely
not. Yeah, it's like... that's the funny thing, you know, the sexy things of muscle ups and stuff, like, while they can be functional and we understand the benefits of it and why we do it, it's also one of the things that if you never do a ring muscle up again, you can still be okay.
My life will be okay.
Yeah,
unless,
that's right.
I mean, a bar muscle up, unless I'm trying to get away from police and I need to jump over a fence.
It always comes back to that. It always comes back to that. What am I going to do if I'm running away from the cops?
But I think I'll be okay at this point. I'll be okay.
I like the follow-up question to that is, like, What do you imagine you possibly doing that's caused you to run away from the cops?
Yeah, exactly. At this point in my life, yes. I feel like I'm okay.
Yeah, something's gone wrong.
Something's gone really wrong for that to be going down. So yeah, at this point, I'm more training, mostly mental.
Yep.
So that's another sort of side effect to COVID. My training took a really big backseat. My mental health suffers because of that. Because, you know, I would say probably 60 to 70% of my mental health I attribute to CrossFit. Changed my life completely. Yep.
I'd have to probably agree. Yeah. I
have a lot of anxiety tendencies and all of those sorts of things. And so without this place, I tend to get a bit jittery. That's what I'm doing now. And I think that communities like this, you create really close connections with people.
Yep.
And that's what we need as humans is connection. And that's what I'm here for. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well said. I'm kind of finding out the train for life kind of thing at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Forced. Sort of.
You don't have a choice.
I don't really have much time.
Here's a dumbbell. Try and fit it in. Yeah,
Oh, look, to be honest, I've got a great setup at home. As you could probably imagine, I've been training a long time and I love to train.
Yeah.
And it's very challenging though when you're like, getting, Dad, I'm hungry, or, you got to wipe an ass or something in mid set of thrusters.
Yeah.
It kind of reduces the intensity somewhat.
Yeah, the intensity is definitely down.
Yeah, but for me, it's a good, good little reality check and a good break. And it's kind of cool to sort of slip into that, just staying fit for life mode. And I think the reduced time frame for me really helps as well. It's like, hey, give yourself 1 hour.
Yeah.
You got 1 hour from start to go. And that's when the old Nintendo comes out. Right, boys, you've got an hour. I've got an hour. I'm going to do as much as I can in this hour.
Let's make it count.
Yeah. Cool. So in the future, any goals coming up that you have for yourself? I know you kind of just said you're training for life, but even maybe outside of the gym, anything you're doing that's exciting?
On a training side, I should say physicality side, so through COVID and the move and adjusting, I think the last time I jumped on a scale, I probably regained 8 kilos of where I like to be. So I've dropped down below, I think it was about 13% body fat, which is not a great place for me to be.
Yep.
But I was competitive at the time, so you understand that.
It's pretty low for a girl.
Really low, like not great.
Yep.
There was things suffering, but...
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that was then. So I'd like to just... I'd probably want to drop about 5 and just hang out there for a while.
Yeah, cool, 5 kilos.
Which it doesn't sound like much, and I drop it just as easily as I gain it. So I'm not concerned by it.
Yep.
That would be one on a physicality side.
Cool.
My other goal is I actually just completed all of my QTAC applications. For those that don't know what QTAC is,
That's me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh. how you apply to university.
Oh, okay, cool.
So when you go back to study, you fill in your QTAC applications.
Yep.
So hopefully, fingers crossed.
What are you studying?
So I want to go back and do my Bachelor of Physiotherapy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, or exercise science or something of that vein. So I've got a few preferences that I've put down.
Yeah, okay.
I love training and I love coaching people.
Is now a good time to do that, considering there's no overseas students here? Is that...
Well, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to drop that on you, but...
No, absolutely. There's definitely more places at university at the moment because we're not taking international students, but they take up a small percentage, but it is definitely...
I'd imagine you still need some pretty solid a pretty solid background in education to be able to go in and do physio.
Yeah, so because I've got... degree and backing, and I can cross credit a lot of the other stuff that I've done in sports.
Cool.
And then because also I've been in the industry, I can basically write a letter and sell myself as to why I think I'm dedicated
to
do it.
Get a spot. Yeah.
So there's a bit working there. And then also, if all else fails, I can also go and do some bridging courses and then cross over down the track once I've got to where I need to be. Because it's essentially, these days they call it an ATAR. It was an OP maybe when you're at school.
I didn't even finish school. It was an OP though, but I didn't get one.
So you have to have a certain OP to, yep. to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if all of that doesn't work, then you can reduce that ATAR score, but you do it by bridging courses. So
yes, okay.
Getting good enough grades and then bringing that score down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's that goal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's exciting. That sounds like enough goals.
Yeah.
To be worrying about at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the small achievable ones. Yeah. We have big ones, but we don't need to go into those.
Okay. Cool. Big hairy audacious goals.
Ah, you listen to the same podcast.
Is that chasing excellence? Well, he actually got that from somewhere else.
Oh, did
I'm
he?
Trying
he
to remember where that came
from. Somewhere else.
Traction, I think. What's his name? The guy that wrote Traction. Anyway. Yeah. But I think that's a pretty, yeah, it is good for that. I think it's a pretty common vernacular. I think
yeah.
Leah actually used to use it at Lululemon.
Oh, right.
As well.
Yeah, so it's obviously.
So it's, yeah, it's come from somewhere. I don't know where it is, but yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, we normally ask, like, who would you go on a big long car drive with? But essentially, what the question is if you could sit down with anyone and have a really good conversation with them, dead or alive.
Yeah.
Can't be your husband.
God, I wouldn't want it to be.
Well, it's kind of funny, you know. Like,
I like him, but...
as I've gone through this with all the coaches, I feel like the younger coaches that are maybe in not a new relationship, but maybe aren't married or whatever, they're like, oh, I'd take my partner, it'd be amazing, and we'd hang out. And anyone that's a bit older, and I'm sitting here thinking...
13 years.
I don't know if I'd take my wife. I mean, I love her,
yeah.
But that's a big drive.
Yeah, it's a long drive.
Yeah.
Talk to him every night.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so who would it be?
It's actually really funny because I probably just said it. I would probably want to take the Chasing Excellence guys with some with some podcast equipment. And get them to drum out podcast the whole time and I could just listen to it. Honestly, listen. I love
it. You could just get on it with them.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah, it is good, yeah.
A lot of the avenues that I've been led down has been through listening to both of those guys in different ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd probably take both of those guys.
Yeah. It's Ben Bergeron and Patrick what's his last name?
Cummins.
That's it. Yeah, cool, because he kind of focuses on marketing and a lot of that sort of stuff.
Super smart guy.
Yeah.
Business sense and, marketing design, anything that's that side of the fence is all him. And then, Ben is your training. But not only training, it's a lot of it is the lifestyle stuff and mindfulness and goals and goal setting and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to see, to kind of see him go through the evolution of learning.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because he kind of just tells everyone what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And he's got a great way of looking at things and a great way of applying things. Which is really cool because, I've listened to that podcast over the years as well and I continue to do so because I think it's great.
Yeah.
And you can see him going through iterations of I'm trying this and then I'm going to this and that didn't work but this did work and now I'm going there and... It's a really good growth mindset kind of example to follow. Yeah, I think it's excellent. Cool. Well, that's exciting. Anything else that I haven't covered or asked you that you might have thought we would speak about?
No. I'm trying to think back to the other podcast you've done with coaches. Oh, hobbies, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Outside of CrossFit, what? There's
nothing.
Anything else?
that's why I stopped asking that question. Nothing else is very important.
Nothing else matters.
I'm joking. What do you do outside of CrossFit?
So
other than mum?
Yeah, I've got three kids, so that's a lot. So we do a lot of things together. I try and keep them as active as possible.
Yep.
They want guns like mum, so we
They
do
want
it.
What? Guns.
Guns like
I'm like, what?
Arms.
Tell me about the guns you have. Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, just try and elicit some fitness into them. Obviously,
it's kid-friendly. It's tough too. What do you do with them?
So we do a lot of mountain bike riding.
Yep.
Hiking.
Cool.
We do... They will do circuit training with me.
Yep.
It has to be short and sharp.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a 5 or 7 minute limit,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. So they'll usually do like a warm-up with me and then they go and I have to do a workout.
Yeah,
that's how we roll that.
Yep.
But in Indonesia, it was very different. They're allowed in the gym. There's no rules.
Yes,
so,
right. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
So I used to run a lot of the kids' classes simultaneously. So we would have anywhere from 2 to 15 in different classes. Right. But we would have 2-year-olds doing CrossFit, essentially. Really.
Awesome. Yeah.
We would use dowel and we would use, like, the little baby plates and things like that. But so they've grown up in the gym. So they're used to doing that and that being a part of their lives. But yeah, so we do hiking, we do mountain biking. My eldest is right into rugby. So we spend a lot of time going to the Reds games and things
How
like that.
How old is he?
So he's 12.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Just did rep rugby. So yeah, rugby is a big part of my life.
So the ages of your kids?
12, 9 and 6.
12, 9 and 6, right, cool. So you're getting to be able to do some pretty cool stuff with them.
Really
It's kind of hard when they're across that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of across that a little bit younger, but I'm probably about a year behind.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
Yeah.
And the older two are like chomping at the bit, wanting to do stuff, and the younger one's not quite there. We went mountain bike riding the other day and he's like, "Dad, I'm going to catch fire." I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?
Promise.
I'm so hot. My hands are wet." Oh. And he was like, "Ah, keep pedaling, mate. You'll be right." It was so funny. He just hadn't been that hot and sweaty before and he was panicking.
Oh, I love it.
But the older two were off and they're like, "Dad, we love this. Let's go again. Let's do another lap." And the youngest one's like, "Oh, I don't want to do it anymore." And so,
if you ever want to take them, there's a great spot over at the Gap.
Yeah.
Enogra Reservoir there, and they've got like junior tracks and then medium tracks and then proper tracks.
What's that? It's just the back of Mount Coothra, isn't it? Gap Creek?
Yeah. The Enogra Reservoir, whatever it is called. But they've got like mountain bike little training tracks, which the kids love.
Yeah, righto. Cool. Yeah.
So, and, and then I also dabble in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, look out.
Yeah, I'm a dancer. So I do
a dancer as well. What sort of dancing?
Well, I grew up dancing. So I
tap, ballet, jazz sort of dancing?
Yeah. So I danced representative. So I danced for Queensland.
That's cool.
We're talking years ago now, though.
Yeah, that's all right.
I can't remember it now.
The reason I am familiar with those terms is my sister danced as I grew up. And we had to go and watch a concert every year.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Hated it until I was about 14.
I'll come.
yeah, exactly.
So, cool. I try and do a little bit of that.
Because don't they have, they have like dance classes now for adults, don't they? Like dance
everywhere,
fitness.
All the time, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I do that. I've done a bit of salsa dancing just for fun. I like to do things that are different. I think it keeps fitness interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying new things, so.
Gives you good perspective and lets you use your fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. I just took the kids bouldering last week, which was super fun as well for all of them.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll give a shout out while I'm doing this. An ex-member of ours, Christian Elo, Chris and Michelle, were members here for years anyway. Michelle's an obstetrician. He was a pharmacist, then a physio, and then just got sick of that. Very intelligent person.
Yeah.
And then has opened a place called Bold Move at Kiwana or Batinia. Same spot. Amazing facility.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. So if you're ever up that way, guys, head in there. Tell him you train here. And some of the nicest people I've ever met. Really good friends. And amazing facility. They've got a little CrossFit gym out the back and a massive bouldering, brand new bouldering facility.
Oh, excellent.
Super cool. Cool.
We took ours rock climbing, and my youngest, who's fearless, if anyone knows Audrey, I'm sure you would, from coming here at 6 a.m.
It's just her out here, right?
Yeah. She is absolutely fearless. She outclimbed all of us straight to the top. The boys wouldn't go near it. She
That's
did it
awesome.
Six times in the space of them doing it once.
In the climbing gym or
outside? In rock climbing. In the rock climbing gym.
Yeah,
and then
cool.
Bouldering, she was up and Spider-Maning. And,
That's awesome. It's so good for them.
Oh, and she's crazy strong already. If she gets into gymnastics or CrossFit or something, she's going to be dangerous. I know she will.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's exciting.
That's me.
Excellent. Well, it doesn't sound like you have much time for anything else.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot going. There's a lot there between dancing, hiking, mountain biking.
Yeah.
CrossFit, 3 kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dancing. What did I say? Dancing? No, going to uni.
I like keeping busy though.
Yeah. Cool. All right, I think that's us. We've been going for nearly 45 minutes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So if anyone's still listening, that's
Glad
about it
here.
For us. I'm sure you'll still be listening. Now, I'm just thinking out aloud while we're podcasting for things coming up in the gym. The Kickstart Challenge for Nutrition starts on Saturday. So it's not too late to jump on board with that. That goes for 30 days. And it's about basically just getting you in line in terms of your nutrition, how much to eat and what to eat and all of those sorts of things to give you a bit of a kickstart to head into summer. And that's about all we got going on. After that, sorry, we've got a level one seminar we're hosting, and that's at the end of October. So if you're ever interested in learning more of the fundamentals about CrossFit or coaching or just from an athletic point of view, the level ones are an exceptional seminar jump on.
Can't rate them high enough.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of different things over the years for fitness, and it was easily one of the better ones I've ever done.
Couldn't agree more. Cool.
So get on it.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's us. Thanks for coming in, Shannon.
No, you're welcome.
We'll be back next week, hopefully, with something else to talk about.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
See ya.
See ya.